You're listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's awesome. I love it. That's all we're going to do.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
So the new studio, man.
Yeah, this new palatial estate that we're recording out of.
I dig it.
I made the point earlier. I was like, you know, we've moved into this new studio that Jeff has now built out of his apartment. Mm-hmm. And
we've
picked the same seats that we usually sit in. We are in the same kind of position, just closer together.
That's right. I feel like I can reach out and touch you.
You can if you want.
I might have to.
Only under the table. Thank you.
That's
so
what I meant.
I'm conflicted tonight.
Uh-oh. Why is that?
Well, because, one, this is like back-to-back talking about movies that I enjoy.
All right.
Also, just starting out watching movies as a kid, obviously the first film I ever saw was Empire Strikes Back, but like my father sitting around at home watching movies on Sundays, like he introduced me to great like action films and stuff, mm-hmm, with John Carpenter's like trifecta of The Thing, Escape from New York, and this movie, Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes, all good ones.
So it's tough for me to tear this thing apart.
Well, there's a lot to like about this movie, and there's also a lot to not like,
about it. Well, we'll get into it. This is the Editing Bay on the Next Wave Radio Network. My name's Joe.
And I'm Joel.
And like I said, we're going to be talking about the Kurt Russell epic, Big Trouble in Little China, which originally started off, the script was an old Western.
I read that. Yeah, yeah. I did that in the research. And I can see that, having seen it now.
You could see it the way the story moves, mm-hmm, and the way our main character acts, but then they ended up having to bring it into modern times because they wanted to make it compete with movies like The Golden Child.
It wasn't movies like The Golden Child. It was specifically The Golden Child that was going to go up against.
Well, we talked about in the Golden Child episode that John Carpenter was supposed to direct that. They wanted him to direct that film.
Yeah.
And he didn't and ended up doing this one. And this one was rushed through production so it could compete with The Golden Child in the, mm-hmm, box office. Mm-hmm.
And although arguable as to which one ended up winning in
the
end.
Well, it's true because I think we talked about with like the gross for The Golden Child that The Golden Child was actually a commercial success.
Very much so. Well, you had Eddie Murphy behind you. He was just coming off of Beverly Hills Cop.
Well, Beverly Hills Cop, Trading Places. Exactly. He was a big box office draw, mm-hmm, and this movie did not do well in the box office.
No, in fact, I have some numbers here. It was made for $25 million is what they say the budget was.
Yeah.
You know how much it made?
It made just a little over $11
million. $11
million. It's horrible.
It was a huge flop.
A huge flop, but it was more of a, I would argue, more of a fan cult classic than The Golden Child will ever be.
Absolutely. I was looking up the ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, and this is usually, you know, the critics will be a little lower than the audiences, especially, uh-huh, for a movie like this. It's kind of, you know, chop suey, beat 'em up 80s movie. It's actually higher, which is rare. 83% of top critics enjoy this movie. Only 70%, or, mm-hmm, 78% of users did, which usually doesn't happen that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a complex story. You know, what you've
nope,
got, what
true,
you've got, you start out, it's, it is the most simplistic and even arguably misleading openings of any movie. Like, they're just kind of sitting there talking to Egg.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay,
Egg Chan,
you know, we want to know what happened. A whole city block blew up. And we want to know what happened to Jack Burton. You leave Jack Burton alone.
He's a hero.
He's a hero.
Yeah.
And you kind of, at least I didn't notice until like this last time watching it,
mm-hmm,
I actually paid attention to that. And I was kind of wondering when we were going to come back to that later in the movie.
Yeah.
They never come back to it. It never pays off. Like, okay, what exactly is happening here? Are they in the middle of a trial?
Yeah.
Is there some kind of a committee hearing about like what happened at Lopan's like block of San Francisco in Little China?
Well, and the reason behind that is that scene was actually shot after the fact. It wasn't intended. It wasn't in the original script, and they did it because they felt like they needed to make Jack Burton. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Make him seem a little more heroic than I guess the movie portrays him.
Really?
Yeah, so they went back and reshot that and added that intro. So maybe that's where the disconnect for you is coming from.
It just seemed really weird. Even you telling me that,
mm-hmm,
I don't know if they achieved what it was they were going after with that scene. Like, it didn't, to me, build the legend of Jack Burton.
Yeah.
You know, it it is funny. There's this fun little juxtaposition where he talks about Jack Burton's a hero, and then we cut into like Jack in his truck, and he's you're listening to the old Pork Chop Express.
Yeah, spouting off on the old ham radio.
Yes.
Love it.
And that's, I mean, that's kind of classic opening. It's really fun getting to know that character. If I were to be really critical about it, kind of obnoxious.
Well, don't do that.
He's a really obnoxious dude.
He's a little bit of who's the guy who shoots arrows and likes hunting, and he's real hardcore Republican.
Oh, Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent. He's a little Ted Nugent.
I was like William Tell. He shot arrows. The little green arrow.
A little more recent than that.
Yeah,
yeah. Ted Nugent. He's kind of got that. He's no loss for words and just kind of spouting off of the mouth. But so endearing at the exact same time.
No, very endearing. And we find out that he's, you know, he's involved in like this kind of community of truckers, shippers.
That's right.
He's friends with this guy, Wang. Well, friends in as much as whenever he's in town, I guess.
They
gamble with each other. And so they know each other for the most part.
Yeah. Back when it was simpler, when you could swindle somebody out of thousands of dollars.
In a simpler time, swindle somebody out of thousands of dollars. Doing what? Was it like scorpion fights or something?
I had no idea. No, it was like checkers or dominoes.
Was it? Because the guy had a bowl. He had like a bowl on top of something, and then he lifted it up. And as soon as he lifted it up, you never saw it. Everybody was just like, screaming. So I thought maybe there were like scorpion fights going on.
You think it was maybe some unfinished special effects?
Unfinished special effects, or they took it out because of like, you know, animal rights.
Because fucking PETA in the 80s.
I don't know. Was it active in the 80s? I don't think so.
Oh, God, I hope not. Well, because that's when people were like throwing paint on people wearing fur coats. That was very heavy.
Was that around then?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. I was thinking about that just because like in the late 80s, early 90s was when we got Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Right.
And I was noting, because they showed it at the Draft House this past weekend.
Yeah, man.
There's the part where Indy and Elsa Schneider go down into the sewers under Venice.
Right.
And there's all the rats.
The rats.
And like at one point you actually see Harrison Ford like step on a fucking rat.
Yeah.
Like that shit would not go over. Like people would be up in arms about that stuff, right?
PETA's a little more selective about the animals they defend.
Fuck rats.
Well, you say that. Although, didn't they get really pissed off when Obama like swatted a fly during an interview, and they were like, "All creatures are beautiful. He's a murderer."
I missed that. I missed that one.
When PETA goes after Obama,
I think you'd be more likely to go after, if you're part of a special interest group like that, you're going to go after the leader of the free world before you go after Indiana Jones.
Those publicity whores.
I know, right?
So answer me this question.
Please.
Unless you want to talk a little bit about...
About politics and PETA? No, please ask your question. Okay.
How many times have you seen this movie?
I've seen this movie probably...
If you had to put a ballpark on it.
Man.
We're in double digits, I'm assuming.
Somewhere between like 75 and 50.
What?
I've seen the movie a lot.
Holy shit.
I've seen it a lot.
Where does this fall in with like Star Wars, Indiana Jones? Because those are Big Lebowski numbers.
Well,
for me.
I would probably put this movie with Big Lebowski.
Holy Christ.
I like it as much as I like Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
it's quotable. It's fun. It's a very fun little self-contained action film.
Yeah.
You don't really need much more than what's on the surface. And if there's anything you might be in danger of missing, luckily Kim Cattrall's there to give you the motivations and the backstory on everything.
she is Mrs. Exposition.
She is walking exposition the entire movie.
But they know it, and she knows it, and it's done in kind of a fast-talking,
career-gal
kind of way. No, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I ask you how many times you've seen it, because I actually have a confession to make. You mentioned earlier that... one of the reasons, you know, I keep coming back to this. I know one of a couple of our people on our Facebook page have been requesting.
Yeah, this
us
one
to
was
do
a
this.
Highly requested movie for us to watch.
Yeah, and it's one of those cult classics, as you said. It's withstood the test of time, and so I can understand why.
Well,
I can understand why people want to get our.
For the most part, it stood the test of time.
Maybe not the effects wise. We'll get into that here in a second. Uh-huh. So my confession is, I had never seen this movie before today.
Really?
I know. Jeff is gasping over here. Audible gasp. Not in its entirety. I realized I had seen scenes, and then as I was watching it today, I was like, oh, okay, I've just seen it out of order.
Yeah.
There are entire chunks of this movie I'd never seen before.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, I don't know. I didn't know that's how they got from here to here. I didn't know there were these monsters.
I feel like this movie is single-handedly responsible for stuff like Mortal Kombat.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
And like Street Fighter. A lot of like the fighting techniques and the styles and stuff that you see in this movie sneak up in... Mortal Kombat, especially.
Clearly,
Raiden.
I was going to say, clearly Raiden is a ripoff of, you know, one of the three. Well,
the Three Storms.
Thunder, whatever his name was.
Lightning.
Or is he Lightning?
He'd be Lightning.
Yeah, my bad.
Because he had Lightning.
What is it? Thunder, Lightning, and who's the other one?
Heart. And their powers combined, they create Captain Planet. I don't know. There was Thunder. Thunder was the one. thunder. Wow.
That was awful. See, so, put me in your musical, Joe.
He's the one that blew up at the end.
Yeah.
And lightning was obvious. Maybe rain. Maybe that's what that other guy was. Maybe he was rain. It. Chocolate rain.
I'm so tempted to sing.
No.
Okay. So I feel better that I've got that off my chest there and shoulder.
Wow, I'm surprised.
I felt like a film, like, you know, you can't say that. And at a certain point, you have to, like, stick to your lie.
Uh-huh.
So years ago in high school, like, oh, yeah, Big Trouble, Little China. When the truth is, I was probably too young to, I was, because let's see, when did this come on? 86? Was I 13 at that time?
Was it 86 that this came out?
Is this, 1986.
Wow.
The same year as Golden Child, 6 months, beat it to the box office. But did not beat it.
Did not beat it at the box office.
That's right.
Wow.
So yeah.
What do you think the problem was with this movie? What do you think kept it from making the money? Do you think just that it didn't have a big, you know, a big name draw? That, like, you know, because Kurt Russell, people know who Kurt Russell is.
Yeah.
But, you know, we were kind of lousy as a society. We were lousy with kung fu movies at that point.
That's true, and they were all kind of B movies. Mm-hmm. They took themselves too seriously. There wasn't this kind of comedic aspect that you see in this movie.
It seems like a movie like this would have been hard to advertise.
The thing. It's like, how do you market this? Even today, I don't know that they'd be able to market it correctly.
So what we have is kind of a, it's sort of a fairy tale story.
Yeah.
About, you know, because Wang ends up having to go pick up his mail order bride or whatever
Wang.
From Peking.
Yeah.
And she ends up getting kidnapped at the airport by this group that, what is it, like the death agents or what were they called?
Oh, Kim Cattrall, that's like her first line where she's like, oh, it's the death agents of
and
whatever.
She completely explains the full backstory and like origin of these guys in like 2 seconds.
Font of information there.
And that's where Jack Burton meets Gracie Law. Her name's Gracie Law. She's a lawyer. She explains all this stuff to him, and he's kind of fallen for or whatever, and she's waiting for somebody else as well. Like, I guess she's like a caseworker or whatever. And so these guys, they want to kidnap these women that are coming in from Peking because they have green eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's apparently very rare with
Chinese
Chinese women.
Yeah.
So they succeed in kidnapping Wang's fiance.
Before we get too far
into it. No, I'm going to keep saying Wang.
No, please. You can talk about Wang all you want. We're going to Wang Chung tonight.
Oh, God.
I'm just getting that out of the way now and that
get
way...
getting it out of the Wang.
it's rare that you see, and you can't anymore, scenes that take place as people are deboarding a plane.
With people with weapons in an airport.
Kidnappings and, metallic objects. 9/11 really, like... ruined all movie or all scenes in airports.
Yeah, that's really
movies.
The horrible thing about 9/11.
I know.
Joel.
You know, never forget movies like this where we used to be able to
what
freely
an
have
action. He's such an asshole. This was the bad thing about 9/11.
I'm just saying. Think about all of like the love scenes where it's like Love Actually, where he's like running after through the gates and he's dodging security. And we're like, oh, look at that precocious little kid.
Yeah, I did that once.
Did you?
Uh huh.
This must have been pre 9/11, right?
It was totally pre 9/11. It was like
in
19. It was 1995, 1994.
Okay.
1994. I was dating a girl named Beth. In fact, I'm friends with her still on Facebook.
Oh. Hi, Beth, if you're listening.
She doesn't listen to this.
Some friend.
Her father was moving to Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. Work was taking him to Saudi, and she was going with him. And so, you know, your kids back then, and it's just kind of like, oh, you're going to Saudi? All right, well, we'll still be together or whatever. And
this is pre-internet.
Have a good one, you know?
Yeah.
Just have a good life. And she's like, are you going to come to the airport and say goodbye? I'm like, I'm going to try. I might. And so I couldn't, I didn't have a license or anything yet at this point. And so eventually at the last minute, I got a ride to the airport. Somebody agreed to take me to the airport. And so like,
Was it Liam Neeson?
It was. He was like, we're going to go on a nonstop flight. So I get to the airport and I find out like I've got her gate information or whatever. And I go in and I'm like running through the terminal, just running, get to the international terminal. I'm screaming her name. And they're getting ready to board.
Beth, I hear you calling.
And so I open up the doors and there she is with her family and her like grandparents start crying because I made it and give her a big hug. And then she goes and flies off.
Joe's first chubby. That's the story of the day your balls dropped.
That's really fucking horrible.
No, I'm just picturing,
I just shared
like,
this like really touching moment in my life with you and you're like, You're just thinking about my genitals.
I'm diffusing the situation. I have to bring it down a little bit. It's getting too real. Shit was getting too real.
But getting back to what you were saying.
Dusty in here.
Yes, the pre-9/11 environment, like you could do stuff like that.
Yeah, it was romantic.
There's no way you could, like, you couldn't do this.
No.
He was walking in the deboarding area. He's got a knife in his boot.
I know.
These guys
Everybody's
have guns.
Fucking packing.
Yes,
it's
everyone.
Just like a gang of Chinese guys.
Those
pesky terrorists really
This leads
it
them
everybody.
On a chase through San Francisco to Little China, where they end up in the middle, like they're in his rig.
Yeah, his big rig. I love that big rig, man.
The Pork Chop Express.
That's right.
I love what it says on the front. It's got like the chick, like what's on the mud flaps usually. It's on the front on the grill. It just says, hauling ass.
Yep.
And so there's this huge like battle that breaks out between two factions in Little China. Like there's a funeral going on.
Yep.
And these guys... filled with all of the extras from every kung fu movie and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie you've ever seen.
I was thinking about that.
They're all over the place.
That must have been between that and Golden Child. That was a good year to be a minority in film.
Yes. Yeah. And so so there's this huge battle that breaks out, and that's when the Three Storms show up, and like, you know, Kurt Russell and Wang, they try to get the hell out of there. They end up having to leave the truck, and man, long story short, they end up at Wang's uncle's place. And Jack's trying to, you know, he's talking to the insurance company, trying to get his truck back or whatever. And that's when we kind of start finding out that, like, you know, oh, one of the supernatural beings you ran into in that alley is Lopan, David Lopan.
Yeah.
And you kind of find out that this Lopan character is like a gangster. He's like the godfather of Little China.
Right. Played by, what's the name of that actor?
The guy who was, he was the voice of Kung Fu Panda's father.
That's right. That's exactly the first thing that, he's got one of those voices that you immediately recognize.
Uh-huh.
And he's been in tons of TV and film.
Great character actor.
Character actor, yep.
And so from here, Grace shows up and she's like, oh, these girls are missing. You guys got to go help them. And Jack and Wang go on their adventure to save the girls and ultimately defeat Lopan.
Yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
It pretty much is.
It's the elevator pitch for this movie.
The escalator pitch. Because apparently in like ancient Chinese temples, there are escalators.
Yeah, that's
Did
right.
Did you notice that? No. There are neon lights around skulls and escalators.
They're progressive, those Asians.
It was very progressive. There are plenty of things in this movie that will remind you that this was made in the 80s.
Well, the soundtrack being one.
Well, that's John Carpenter. John Carpenter composes the soundtrack to almost every movie he does. And the only one I enjoy is what the soundtrack he did for Escape from New York.
Okay, yeah.
I really love his work with that.
It's a little different than...
Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
Bum, 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 bum.
You're really taking me back, Jeff.
This one was pretty forgettable.
Yeah, it was cliche. It was just synthesizers galore and everything I hate about 80s music compacted into. But you know what? You don't watch a movie like this for. It was successful in spite of the score, I would say.
Well, the reason it was successful because you're not looking at a movie like this by, you know, and judging it by its artistic merit. You know, this is a movie. This was the 1980s version of Zombieland.
Yeah.
That's what this movie was.
Yeah, had that same feel, the comedy and the little excessive gore.
Uh-huh.
Hot, you know.
So I'm going to kind of leave this more, the ball more in your court on one,
well,
just because it's your
episode.
First time watching it.
Yeah.
I kind of want to get what your thoughts and your feelings are, because I'm going to sit there and just, you know, I can read, like I was telling you before we started recording, I really don't know what to say about this movie because I've seen it so much.
75 times.
And apparently. I really like it. It's kind of hard for me to be objective about it.
Yeah.
And if I can, I'll kind of pick little spots here and there, and like I have already, and kind of pick apart a little bit. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, all I can say is I'll be like, oh, yeah, and I like that part when he did this, and I love that, and oh, my God, it was so quotable. So what did you think?
Well, allow me to be objective then. Okay. Actually, no, I'm there's no surprises here. I dug the hell out of this movie, really. It's pretty fun. It's really enjoyable. And dare I say, ahead of its time, like the again, talking about the comedy and the, I'm pumping the mic here, the comedy and the action and just the setting, you don't really see that back then, or at least done well. That's a very kind of millennial style of humor, I guess. Maybe I'm giving a little too much credit.
Well, no, because there were a couple of things. There's a few little lines that you'll catch if you watch this movie now. God, there's a point where Jack looks at Wang and he's talking to... Oh, my God. Jack looks at... Where Jack's talking to his friend Wang. And he says something about, like, you know, Wang, cultural difference, racial differences aside... You're all right. I'm like, what the fuck is that supposed to mean? That's horrible.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, but you can't get away with that now. You can't. Unless it's like a Johnny Knoxville flick.
Exactly.
You won't see scriptwriters throwing that into stuff.
You know, that was a pretty good impression you just did of Jack Burton, who's basically, Kurt Russell's like doing an impression of John Wayne.
It's John Wayne.
Okay, was that intentional? I guess so.
I think it was. But then again, if you watch Kurt Russell in just about anything, he just kind of has that John Wayne delivery.
He's got swagger.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. He absolutely does. I've got this huge man crush on Kurt Russell.
You know,
and have had it for a long time.
I had forgotten about Kurt Russell for a while, and then Tarantino brought him back in that awful movie.
God, that was so bad.
But it was bad.
He's going to be in the new Fast and Furious.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah. But he's still fun to watch.
Yeah,
he's just so like joyous in the torture that he's.
Well, I mean, he's got an impressive body of work. Mm-hmm. The guy's never really turned in a bad performance.
Captain Ron.
He's never, dude. Even Captain Ron.
All right.
He's funny in that movie. It's not a good movie, but we should have done fucking Captain Ron instead of Big Trouble in Little China. There's plenty more we could have talked about with that one. But even in Captain Ron, stuff like that, he always turns in kind of a solid performance of what's expected of him. He delivers.
Yeah.
I love watching him in, you know, as Snake in Escape from New York.
He's great there.
You know, as Jack O'Neill in Stargate, he's really good. He kind of picks up that whole pulpy, you know, action hero, the flawed hero kind of thing.
That's true.
Overboard as Dean Prophet. Oh, yeah. You know, he can anchor a comedy, he can anchor action. Mm-hmm. You watch a movie like Miracle or Dark Blue, he can anchor a drama.
Yeah.
The guy's got range, and I don't think he's given enough credit for what he can do. I think people just kind of at this point take for granted
the fact that he will
deliver.
Yeah.
Each time. He's never been a huge box office draw.
Yeah.
But he's always been solid.
Yeah, that's a good word to use for him, solid. And in fact, you talked about, you know, one of the thoughts I had, you were talking about how he's kind of irreplaceable. And we'll get into this later when we always talk about recasting, who would we recast. And as I was thinking about it, it's like there aren't a lot of people. I was having difficulty figuring out who to recast. I think I got a good one. We'll save it for later.
Uh-huh.
Maybe two. But who can do comedy and action and be a leading man, but also kind of be a sidekick? He is decidedly the sidekick in this movie.
He is.
They start off, and especially with that first scene that we talked about, the reshot, they're trying to make him the hero. But even as we get towards the end, you realize this isn't really his movie.
It's not his
movie.
It's
Wang's movie.
It is, but the problem is it's Wang's story.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that, you know, it's him that rescues the princess, basically. Mm-hmm. But we follow Jack because he's the most volatile element of the movie.
That's a nice way of saying it, yeah.
But nobody in this film undergoes any kind of a transition.
No, but it's not that kind of movie.
But every story should have something gained. And no character gains anything by the end of it. I'm sorry. I said that I was going to let you take the ball on this one.
No.
And I'm like chiming in way more than I intended.
Well,
to.
Well, we could do what we usually do and talk about plot and stuff. But really, I think you've summed up the plot enough. I just more want to talk about the performances and some moments.
And production.
But first I want to talk about Kim Cattrall looking her foxiest.
Dude,
as I remember. Oh.
She looked really good in this movie.
And this is 1 year before Mannequin came out. And I remember that's the movie where I discovered... I discovered a little something about her, and I discovered something about myself, Joe.
It was like my Wonder Woman moment and my Return of the Jedi moment.
It was your running through the airport chasing your own girlfriend.
There were three things growing up. It was Carrie Fisher in the gold bikini.
Yep, in Return of the Jedi.
Linda Carter as Wonder Woman.
Got it.
And Helen Slater as Supergirl.
Ooh. Never got into Supergirl. It's the hair. It's the curly hair. Because it reminds me of my sister.
She didn't have curly hair.
Did she have like the kind of curly hair? Who am I thinking of?
I don't know.
Wonder Woman or Supergirl?
Yeah, Supergirl was Helen Slater. She had straight blonde hair.
I guess so. You know, I more discovered her in, what's the cowboy movie with Billy Crystal?
Oh, God, City Slickers?
City Slickers.
Yeah.
That's kind of when
you caught her like 25 years later.
But she peaked for me.
Yeah.
I was going through my cougar phase.
I got you. And you know what? She looked really good then.
She's fantastic.
She still looks really good now. She was on a few episodes of Smallville.
She's going to be the Helen Mirren in about 20 years.
But hey, she's already got Helen in the name.
There you go. Old chicks we want to bang.
No, but Kim Cattrall.
Yeah.
Foxy.
Looking fantastic. I really like Kim Cattrall. I hear...
Despite the bushy eyebrows.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it. Because I'm also into... Who's Father of the Bride? The bride from the Steve Martin movie, Father of the Bride.
Oh, I don't remember her name.
She's got some like thick, dark eyebrows. You know what I'm talking about, Jeff? Jeff's giving me the nod over here. He knows what I'm talking... This guy knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So I like that look. She had that right 80s look for me. Mm-hmm. And I like her acting. And you want to talk about... Uh-oh. We're going to just...
No. Go ahead.
You don't like her acting in this movie or in general?
I just don't like her acting in general. I think that she's kind of a... She's one note.
Okay, I'll give you that.
And I thought that I've liked her the best in this movie.
Yes.
Even more so than in Mannequin or in her Sex and the City roles.
Yeah.
I don't like anything about Sex and the City. No. I don't. And I get what Sex and the City is. No, it's not for us. Sex and the City is Star Wars for chicks. Because, you know, just like how as guys we watch Star Wars and we're like, man, I'm such a Han. I'm a Han. And, you know, you're Lando. And
that's right.
I'm Luke. And you're, you know, whatever. Women are like, I'm a Samantha. I'm a Carrie. You know, that.
I'm a lesbian.
Instead of dreaming about flying around in a Falcon, they dream about going into a walk-in closet and having a bunch of, you know, shoes and, you know, $1,000 outfits and stuff hanging on the racks.
And there goes all of our female listeners.
Hello, lover. I don't think we're going to lose all the female listeners. I'm not saying that all women feel this way.
No, you're right.
I'm saying, though, that for women that dig that kind of lifestyle, the that fantasize, it's that fantasy. It's that escapism that we get from Star Wars, and women get that from Star Wars, too.
Yeah.
You know, my girlfriend loves Star Wars. But I know that there are women out there that the escapism and fantasy also exists with Sex and the City.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's science fiction for chicks that don't get science fiction.
That's it. Yeah, okay. I hear you.
But I can't stand,
that's niche.
I can't stand any of the chicks in that show. I think they're all horrible. I think the writing is horrible on it.
Well,
I think the performances are horrible. And I think Kim Cattrall was just as much part of the problem in those shows.
Yeah.
And the fact that they were like, you're going to be the older, sexy cougar. And there's something about when a woman, or not just a woman, there's something about when an actor mm-hmm. performs a role but knows too much about what they're supposed to be doing.
You can
tell. That they're not playing any subtext. They're just displaying it all right there on the surface.
Yeah, it's...
That's what she does.
It's like when Sally Field plays a bitch in a movie and you realize, oh, she does that way too well. Yeah. I think she's a bitch in real life.
She might be a real bitch.
I was watching Mrs. Doubtfire again over the holidays and I was like, man, what a fucking cunt. No wonder Robin Williams. Just let him see her kids.
Can you imagine, like, there was a moment in time where, like, Sally Field played the wife that somebody wanted to win back. That's so weird. That's Gidget.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know the Flying Nun, and that was her, right?
Yeah, she was the Flying Nun.
We've totally gotten off the movie.
We got to the Flying fucking Nun from Big Trouble in Little China. I'm impressed.
By way of Sex and the City, which yes. I agree. Yeah, that movie, for a show that was purported to be about, you know, female empowerment, was really kind of...
It was insulting.
Them
I'd have been
shallow
insulted.
Light.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. So Kim Cattrall, part of the problem. But still, great in this movie.
Yeah.
And like, I think you just said a second ago, you felt she was more comfortable in this role or you believed her more in this role.
I liked her the most in this role.
Yeah, and I agree.
And she served the purpose that this character was supposed to be.
She had a good mix of, I think she got the comedy. Mm-hmm. Going back to Kurt Russell, I think he got the comedy too. My problem the first half of the movie, I wasn't sure whether he was in on the joke or not.
Yeah.
It was a little like, because he was really hamming it up and he's doing that John Wayne voice and just had these crazy lines and kind of, you know, overacting and doing a little bit of mugging.
Yeah.
But he's in on
it. It's a cartoon.
It really
this
is.
This whole movie is it's just a live action cartoon.
And everyone looks like they're having a ball.
Oh, yeah.
There are scenes where he's talking to Wang and Wang looks like he's about to laugh, like he's about to crack up in the middle of his lines. Yes. He's supposed to be like uber serious, like I'm going to go in there like the wind.
Uh huh.
And he's got like this smirk.
I like the part
the
where they take the potion and they're like, I feel kind of invincible. Me
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I feel real positive about this.
Feeling pretty good about this. Then follows it up with, is it getting hot in here? They're very quotable. I see what you mean about this in a Lebowskian sort of way.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's quite a bit of quotable stuff going on in this. And, you know, it's kind of a common trait for a lot of John Carpenter films. I mean, even Escape from New York has a lot of quotable moments. The Thing has a few, maybe not quotable,
mm-hmm.
but it's been lampooned so many times in other movies. You've seen people reference The Thing, whether you've realized it or not.
Right.
Because The Thing is one of those movies where it's the enemy within. We don't know who it is, so now we're all stuck together. We're all suspicious of one another. I love that movie. Have you ever seen that one?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I have seen. Love that.
I haven't
flick.
Seen the remake with our girl.
Oh yeah,
Mary Elizabeth
with
Winstead.
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Mm-hmm. Ramona Flowers.
It's not bad. It's not even a remake.
It's a prequel.
It's
right?
prequel. Yeah. It's what happened before all the shit goes down.
I feel like I need to. Should I see that? As long as we're talking about other movies.
Nova Scotian crew. Yeah, I would recommend it.
All right, I'm gonna check
it out. Enjoyed it quite a bit.
Next week on the Editing Bay. What's it called? The thing that turns?
The thing. It's just the thing.
Is it the thing? Can you do that?
Yeah.
Was the first one John Carpenter's?
I just saw RoboCop. The original was called RoboCop.
What the fuck with all like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and George Romero? I thought
Why are you shaking your head, Jeff?
New RoboCop.
RoboCop, how was dude, it wasn't bad.
Yeah?
It wasn't bad.
Really? Okay.
My big worry about the... on the Editing Bay podcast about Big Trouble in Little China, we we'll talk about RoboCop.
We'll get back to it.
It's a good flick. It's not fantastic. It's not award-winning, but it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it. I was afraid that it was going to try to take the exact 80s story that we got and just retell that, and they don't. The reason why RoboCop works so well, and I'll tell you, the 80s version still works way better than this one does, is that back in the day, we were living in a time of excess, and it was a different kind of class divide going on, especially in America then. True. And what that movie did was it kind of, you know, it turned everything on its ear. It forced us to look at ourselves, you know, through a little bit more exaggerated eyes. And
Verhoeven's not known for being subtle.
But the thing is, there's so much more going on to RoboCop than people might think.
As with all of Verhoeven
movies.
It's
not just an action movie. It's making a pretty significant statement on society. Mm-hmm. And this new one, Jeff's walked away. This new one.
Fuck RoboCop.
He just, you know what?
He'll fuck
just
Samuel L.
He'll
Jackson.
Just listen to this one later. this new one, it still lampoons what's going on. Yeah. It's still it still makes a statement of what's happening right now in today's society, but it does it in a more relatable way for generation.
Well, hey, any movie that's got Samuel L. Jackson and Michael Keaton in it, I'm there. I was just worried by the release date. This is usually when they
did you see that they're going to go ahead with a Beetlejuice revival?
Yeah, they've been talking about that for years. Is that actually happening now?
Well, now that you know you've got Michael Keaton's been in a few movies now these past couple of years, and I think now they feel like the iron's hot. We're gonna try to bring Michael Keaton back.
Nice, with Burton attached as well.
Jack Burton.
Yeah, that's right. Kurt Russell is
Tim Burton.
Wow.
I don't know. I think Tim Burton's going to be attached in a producer capacity.
That could be worrisome. He's hit or miss of recent. Well, speaking of remakes. This is a movie, going back to Big Trouble in Little China, as I was watching it. So we do this a lot, you know, how we do, you remake it. And I'm not jumping to the end here. But this is a movie that should totally be remade, and I say that.
But it has been.
No, but I'm saying this movie.
I'm not talking about, like, this movie in particular, but they've made so many movies like this.
This type of movie?
Yeah, this type of movie's been done with different kind of characters, different kind of scenarios. But at its heart, Big Trouble in Little China, every generation gets remade and remade and remade. You just maybe have different characters, different situations. But the chemistry, that those building blocks, those basic elements are there in every one of these movies. And, you know, like the movie Doomsday. Which is a big homage to, you know, a bunch of old John Carpenter films. You know, you could even say something like Army of Darkness could be seen as a rehashed, a reimagining of something like Big
That's
Trouble in
Little
China.
That's very true. It has that fish out of water aspect to it.
Yes.
It's got kind of this anti-hero who becomes a hero somewhat.
Uh-huh.
Wow, I never thought about that. A good double feature.
Yeah.
Big Trouble in Little China and Evil Dead 2.
Yes.
No, Army of Darkness,
Evil Dead 3.
My bad.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, we've seen it.
Right.
And like I mentioned earlier with something like Zombieland, you know, Tallahassee isn't the star of the movie.
That's true.
It's more,
What's his name?
Yeah. Wichita was the chick.
Dakota?
No, it's God damn it.
Well, we got 47 more
names to
go through.
Fuck me.
Texas, Illinois,
I can't remember what his name was.
Somebody posted on the Facebook page what his fucking name was.
Yeah, there's Little Rock,
because that's how podcasts work in real time.
Those were the girls, Tallahassee and Columbus.
Columbus,
yeah,
there you go.
Columbus. It was more Columbus's story.
Yeah,
but he walked out of that thing only remembering Tallahassee.
That's true.
He was a badass.
Yeah.
And so you know we've seen this. We've seen this movie, this sort of movie, be remade over and over again. And the thing is, the constant with all of those movies has been that they've succeeded with fans. They haven't always been box office successes, mm-hmm. but they've always been movies that have endured. that you will still hear about, you know, several decades later, you'll still hear about these movies. And obviously this is one of them.
I think it's weird that this movie had such a cult following. And I was, since I never saw it as a kid, I was kind of hoping it would just go away.
Yeah.
And it never did. You still hear people talking about it. So now I feel like I'm part of the club.
I had invited a friend of mine. Her name's Taffeta. She does a online radio show called like the Geek Girls Dames of the Round Table.
Isn't one of the racers from Wreck-It Ralph
named Taffeta? Uh-huh.
I love
In fact, at the last Comic-Con, they all dressed up like the racers from Wreck-It Ralph.
Nice.
And she was Taffeta.
Candlehead.
Yeah.
Fucking love that,
that
movie.
That movie was so good.
Oh my God.
We're
going to have to talk about Frozen here too.
At the cons, she just dressed up. She was Lopan, and they had like some of the other chicks were dressed up like other characters
from the movie. Oh, that's great.
She loves Big Trouble in Little China. She like will reference it. I had put a Jack Burton quote on Facebook this morning.
Which one?
And she wrote me. It was that whole beginning about like, you know, when someone takes you
and
slams the back of your favorite head against the barroom wall. So she wrote back and it was like, she was like, you know, I schedule every morning at 8:15 to put a Jack Burton quote on Facebook.
Wow.
Stop reading my mind. And I know she's a huge fan. I had invited her to come on with us, but she had to work.
Oh,
yeah.
That's too bad.
It would have been fun to hear her take on everything as like the super fan who dresses up as these characters. What do you got? What else do you have on these notes?
Well, no, you talked about quotes. One of my favorite quotes too, and he does have a lot of them, and they're just like rapid fire. But I like the one where they're getting ready to go out to. That's about halfway through the movie. Where are they headed to? I can't remember.
To the whorehouse?
Yeah. Yeah. That's where they're heading to. And he's like, "Okay, you people, sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. If you're not back by dawn,
call the president."
It just seems so random. Like, call the president.
I referenced that in a play that I did a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
The musical comedy Murders of 1940 at the Pocket Sandwich Theater. There's a part where, God, what the hell? I my character goes into these secret tunnels. There's like a murder that's been going on, and I play like this plucky comedian that ends up being the hero of the story. And
of course, I
tell my love interest, I'm like, if I'm not back in 24 hours. Cancel my ad in Variety. But one night, instead, I looked at her and go, if I'm not back in 24 hours, call the president. And I left. And my buddy Walt finds me backstage. He's like, dude, the escape from Big Trouble in Little China. Excellent. Yeah. So
did anybody laugh in the audience at that moment?
I don't think anybody in the audience got it at all.
But nobody was laughing at anything.
Nope.
In that
more people got my Doctor Who reference in this werewolf show that I did.
Oh, the times.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to talk to you about that because you're a big Who fan.
Don't.
All right. Another thing that I'll have to revisit in 20 years when it hasn't fucking gone away.
All right.
What else should we talk about here? So yeah, I love Kim Cattrall. Come back to there's that one scene where they're escaping through the pipes.
Uh-huh.
And she's trying to find Jack.
Oh, yes. And they're in the sewers.
Everybody keeps popping up out of the water. She's like, where's Jack? Or no, she goes
she
through the
names.
She's
asking who different people are.
Yeah.
where's what's her name? Because she has that one media friend or whatever, friend.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. No, that's...
It's like three in a row, and then Wang finally comes up. Where's Jack?
I don't know. Do you ever do this when you're watching movies and they have their stuff where they're like underwater and they have to swim like long distances? Do you ever like hold your breath and see if you could make it?
No, because it's always bullshit. There's no way you can... The thing that gets caught with me is, I, you know, as an editor, I can always see, oh, now we've cut from... You know, on location to now we're in a pool, a well lit pool with these set pieces that they've designed. And there's a couple of scuba divers just off camera ready with the oxygen to refill. Yeah, so that pisses me off. James Bond,
the Conan the Destroyer movie. That's the big one with me because like they go swimming at one point and like Schwarzenegger seriously is holding his breath for like 4 minutes in that movie.
Yeah.
And there's no way. Like I'll pass out.
There's a way to do it. I guess I'm thinking of Titanic too, where it was like really stressful because you know that movie is a little more. I was about to say that movie is a little more real. Is that movie a little more real?
It is maybe a little more real than Conan the Destroyer.
Well, that's true. Both based on historical incidences, though. Hey, that's fact. Read it up on it.
Yeah.
So I love those little moments. There are, even as I was watching this, Jeff is losing it over here. Even as I was watching Big Trouble in Little China, I was thinking about the next time I'm going to watch it, and I'm like, oh, that scene, and specifically the one we're talking about with them, you know, her popping out of the water, trying to find different people.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to love seeing that again
uh-huh.
when I see it the next time. And there's five or six little moments in there like that. Like, I don't want to rewind right now. I want to, you know, let it play and let it flow, as yeah. it were. But I'm gonna enjoy when I revisit that. I'm going to remember. I'm going to laugh to myself. And that's a sign of a successful movie,
yeah,
right?
As you're watching it, you look forward to watching certain
When's
parts.
The last time you were watching a movie and realized in the middle of the movie, that it wasn't going to be the last time you see it, and two, I like doing that, and B, that it was a great movie.
Lego movie.
In the middle of it. Wow. See, damn it, I got to see
Lego
this fucking
movie,
movie.
Man, you do have to see this movie.
It's got like a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Amazing.
Are we getting a little bit of the February blues that everything
no.
seems awesome?
No. Everything
you're
is awesome.
RoboCop.
Everything is awesome. That's the song in the
I
movie.
Know, that's why I said that.
That's really well done.
Yeah.
No. You know what? I don't think it's the February blues because no one went in with lower expectations of RoboCop than I did. And like I said, I didn't think it was great, but I liked it. I had a good time with it. You know, just like the original RoboCop, because the original RoboCop movie is not a perfect film.
Nah.
But it was perfect for its time, if that makes any sense.
No, yeah.
Like, it was perfect for its time, but it does not stand the test of time.
Yeah, I would agree.
And this won't either. But
out and see RoboCop,
everybody. It's still not a bad flick. But the Lego movie, no. This is a strong
classic
movie. I feel like the only reason it was released in February was because they weren't quite sure.
Yeah.
I just say this is a lack of faith with the suits.
Yeah.
Because the talent's there. The script is tight. It's clever. It's funny.
Well, when else do you release it? Do you either do it like in Thanksgiving?
I would have done a holiday release
with
it.
Yeah, but then you're competing with like fucking Frozen.
Then compete. This movie does compete with Frozen.
All right.
This movie could put Frozen up against the ropes if you put it head to head.
Luckily, it won't have to be.
Frozen's got a lot of heart. But Frozen is a typical Disney formula movie.
Sure.
Whereas the Lego movie isn't. I'm going to tell you, the Lego movie is a lot like, it's like a funny animated kiddie version of like the story of Tron Legacy.
Oh,
it's like, I mean, it's so amazing. Like, it's just about this character that just, in fact, there are some homages to Tron where like they escape from this Lego city through some tunnel, like in the side of the grid. And it's, I just sat there going, wow, this is like the first two Tron movies. it's really good. It's really clever. It's funny. It's endearing. All the voice work is really good. The cameos are wonderful. Will Arnett as Batman, like
yeah.
the fact that they bring that Batman is a character in this movie.
I can't believe they got clearance for that.
It's really cool.
Because I guess this is a Warner Brothers movie.
Yeah. All yeah. Right. It's a Warner Brothers flick. The music is hoppy and
is it
and
a musical?
Catchy. No.
Right,
no, but there's some music and stuff in it. But the statement that it's making also, like, it's making a couple of different statements. It's, you know, it's kind of refreshing to see, like, what could have been seen as just a giant commercial for Lego.
Oh, yeah.
But it's, like, all about, like, anti-consumerism and,
oh,
like,
interesting.
You know, make your own choices. Don't follow the flock. You know, it makes a statement about, like, building Legos. You don't always have to go with the instructions. You know, Legos, use your imagination. And, you know, then there's the whole point of, like, you know, the generational gap and like people like me who like, you know, you'll build Legos and then you just put them up and you know, you display them and maybe someone will come along and you're like, oh, don't mess with that. Don't screw around with that.
Sounds
but then
very
you,
familiar.
You're like, wow, don't, but they're made to be toys. They're made to be played with. And you know, why can't I play with these things and use my imagination as well? And so I don't want to ruin it. I'm trying not to ruin anything about the movie, but yeah. There's a lot going on with this flick, and it's really well done.
Who is the studio behind it? The animation house.
Ooh,
it wasn't like any of the big ones, right?
I can't
it wasn't
even
like DreamWorks.
Nope, it wasn't DreamWorks. It wasn't Pixar.
Jeff, I can't wait to see how you label this episode when it goes up on iTunes. Big Trouble Little
China
slash
RoboCop
slash
everything.
Lego Movie slash Sex and the City.
Yeah, no, it's.
I'm excited
because
about
like I told you, there really isn't a whole lot for. There's not a whole lot
no,
to
I hear
say
you.
About Big Trouble in Little China
no,
that hasn't
you.
Already been said. It's a solid movie. It's a solid action flick. It's hard to tear apart, and that's why I kind of had, you know, I know with our live event advertisement. Somebody, one of our listeners said something about, you know, Big Trouble in Little China. And Jay came in. Jay from the editing bay came in. And he's like, Big Trouble in Little China?
That's not
a bad movie. I thought we were supposed to be talking about bad movies. And everybody makes that argument. They're like, well, people who like good movies can't stand Big Trouble in Little China. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I didn't
Even look at the IMDb ratings, and Big Trouble in Little China has like a 7 out of 10.
7 point something, Yeah, I didn't think I was going to like it. Because I generally didn't like those kind of 80s movies. And I'm very particular about my John Carpenter. The Thing is okay. I'm not as big a fan of The Thing as you. Now, maybe I need to revisit it.
You should revisit it. It's a scary movie, man. It's a legitimately scary
flick. I don't necessarily like scary movies. Oh. And I thought this was going to be not necessarily a scary movie for me as a 35-year-old man. But when I was a kid, like I was like, oh, I can't handle this. There's like demons and people throwing lightning and monsters and shit. But it's so funny. It's so much funnier than that.
It's a cartoon. Like I said, it's a cartoon. It's a G.I. Joe episode. So let's get to that final battle that takes place in Lopan's like temple, where there's just nothing but neon lights and escalators.
People
and
flying everywhere.
People flying the big battle, all these different, so many dummy heads getting punched in the foreground. It's so funny.
Yeah.
Jack knocking himself out as they get ready to charge in.
He shoots the gun in the air. And this.
I mean, it's such an Ash moment from Army of Darkness.
Yes, yes. He spends most of this. And specifically that last sequence, that fight sequence, like he's not. That's when it becomes most apparent he's not the hero. Uh-huh. Like, he doesn't really save the day. He kills a couple of guys, but he spends the majority of it on his back, with that one guy crushing him.
Yes, yes, that's the whole battle. I love the way it's shot.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in a scene like that, you're going to run into some continuity mistakes, and there are plenty of them here.
Yeah,
but at the same time, I was kind of surprised at how many, even in that opening battle where like everybody's fighting around the rig, there was some pretty good attention paid to like, you know, positions and stuff. And, you know, this person went here and this person came out here. Like they paid attention to some stuff in continuity that helped those scenes flow.
It wasn't just a lot of, oh, you guys fight and we're going to get a bunch of coverage and we'll figure it out in the editing bay. It was like, huh, the editing bay. it was like,
way to plug ourselves in our own podcast.
Two guys and then he's going to kill three more and we're going to intercut these different fight stories going on.
Exactly.
Very well done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and this movie really kind of like flies by.
It's an hour and a half long.
It is paced within, you know, an inch of its life. It's just like, and like you said, you know, from the moment, you know, they're picking up the chicks in the airport and they get whisked away and then it's a car scene and then they go through the alley and then it's this big fight. It never stops.
No, there's plenty of writing flaws in this movie because as the story progresses, like characters just kind of come in and they know things that they're not really supposed to know yet. Like when Kim Cattrall comes into, goes to Wang's house.
Yeah.
And she just shows up and he's like, what the hell is she doing here? and you know, she comes over and she's like, ah, you know, Lopan lived, blah, blah, blah. And I just saw that like the gangsters, I've heard that they have your truck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, how do you know? Like there's no one has said to you, there's no way she could know that, but it's the writing. They assume that the viewer's going to know all these things because they know it and they're not realizing, oh, we are skipping a few steps in the writing and making this look like everyone's psychic.
And how did, okay, so the woman that, the other Chinese girl that Kim Cattrall is picking up at the airport, that we kind of never revisit, right?
Nope.
Like she's locked up in a room during that one scene before they go off, and then it's like we never get. So what was the whole point?
See her again.
I was really waiting for that payoff.
Never see her again. There's a few things in this movie that they never pay off, just because I think either they edited it out or they just forgot about it.
Who cares in this chop
suey? Like, we're just gonna talk. It's an action fucking movie.
Well, and I will say this: that the only times the movie really slows down is when Kurt Russell isn't on screen, or there isn't some sort of action going on, or who's the guy who plays? I can't even think of that. Not Egg Chan.
Wang.
No. Lopan.
Oh God! Where he's
chooses the scenery. But,
oh God! But
the
only
wedding
good.
Scene.
He chooses the scenery, but when he's by himself,
and
the wedding scene, like it's not as good. But when he's playing against Kurt Russell, or when he's playing up against Egg, it's really good stuff.
Yeah, he's funny as hell. Uh-huh. But yeah, that wedding scene at the end was really starting to
drag. Yeah, it drags.
It's like, oh, what are we doing here?
There's also the scene where the guys are getting ready for battle or whatever, and we keep cutting to Lopan, and like the storms are doing like their katas in front of the chicks.
Yeah, and they're like, and ultimately for what? Like just that was preparing them for, I guess. But couldn't you have done that? And then they fly up on the sword, and they have to touch a pearl.
Light bulb.
Yeah,
it's so
weird. A big clitoris in the sky that they have to diddle before you can get married. Symbolic, really, when you think about it that way.
That's going
to
be on our first T-shirt.
Some deep,
just you and I as the two chicks from Big Trouble in Little China.
It's like our version of David touching the big clitoris in the sky. Love it. But yeah, really pleasantly surprised in a movie that I didn't think I was going to like.
Uh-huh.
Certainly didn't think I was going to enjoy this much. And we got to get back to movies that we hate.
Yeah,
that are bad.
I agree.
That'll happen.
So what did you like most about this flick? What did it do best?
Well, I don't want to take the good answer and say Kurt Russell, but I will. Kurt Russell is pretty good. He makes this movie. It's his movie, really.
Yeah.
Even though it's not his movie, as we discussed before, he doesn't go through a change. But man,
but take
he's
him
so
out.
Fun.
Like take him out of this movie,
or replace him with somebody. Who you'd replace him with, and have this movie become a cult hit?
Who else would have been big at the time? You know what? You know what would have been the worst?
Joe Piscopo.
That would have been the worst.
Is that what you were going to say?
Nope, I wasn't, but that was way worse than I was going to say.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say Richard Chamberlain. Like, this is going to be some
movie. There you go.
Suddenly they'd throw Richard Chamberlain in, and like they'd try to butch him up a little bit.
Well, I was going, you know, if Golden Child is the Eddie Murphy version of this movie,
Joe Piscopo
gets the...
That's wonderful. you put anybody else in this role, and it doesn't quite work as well, which is a shame. The movie did deserve to be a little bit more of a box office hit. And it wasn't.
I think
but I'm glad that it still found a lot of life after the theater.
And I'm telling you, I want a remake. I want Bigger Trouble in Littler China.
Littler China. Right. So, what do you think that the movie did bad? What was the smudge?
I didn't need the monsters. I didn't need the creatures and makeup at the end.
Yeah.
It had its own world. And we talked about this last week with Hansel and Gretel. With the troll.
Uh-huh.
It was like, you had this world, and you had witches, and they're killing witches, and then they just drop another mythical creature into the middle of it. It's like, all right, didn't really need it.
Right.
They did something better with it than I think this movie did with that kind of floating multiple eyeball.
The Beholder.
It was like Krang from the Ninja
Turtles
without a body.
Well, and then
there
was also like some werewolf beast.
And then like a werewolf beast that shows up briefly, like out of nowhere, and then terrorizes Kim Cattrall a little bit and tries to dry hump her, and then shows up in the very last scene,
the little sequel
setting
teaser.
Up for a sequel that they were planning a sequel apparently for this. Except when your movie, it costs $25 million and only makes 11.
Yeah,
though you're not so quick to greenlight those.
No. Yeah, somebody's still wondering where their $14 million's at.
No, I'm pretty sure they've made it up by now. Don't you think?
You think in international sales and stuff like that?
Oh, 30 years of VHS sales and copies, and like you said, how many times you see it on cable?
I've
just
seen
the advertising money from the cable rehashes.
Uh-huh.
So, all right, what about you? What did you like?
I liked the production design of this movie a lot.
Yeah, there you go.
I really loved it because you could tell like. If they were using actual locations, it was only like once or twice in the whole film. Everything else was studio. Mm-hmm. And I loved the design of it. I thought they did a really excellent job. They did a great job with their exterior studio stuff.
Yeah.
They did a great job with Lopan's factory. I loved the whole gimmick of like there was a hell for everything. And they played off that joke. Like it's the hell of being hung upside down.
Yeah, exactly.
The hell of being skinned alive.
I love when Wang's like, he's reading the sign and Kurt Russell's like, what does
the
that sign say?
The hell of death by boiling water. And he's like, you're fucking kidding me. He's like, yeah, I am. It just says danger beware.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I loved it. I loved that they created their own mythology and they stuck with it. And what helped them do that was the authenticity of all these different locations that they built to be Little China. But then also Lopan's little like underground kingdom was also pretty cool. It was designed really well. I loved the symmetry of it. And I know that seems really simplistic, but
no.
There were a lot of sets that had like this perfect symmetry to it that... It helped the flow of the story. Lopan's throne room, even the ceremonial chamber where they were doing the wedding and the battle took place had a beautiful symmetry to it, even though it had like the neon lights. I was still kind of out on that.
It was the 80s, to be fair.
Yeah, it was the
80s. That's how you make something.
But you had the neon
lights
and you had like an escalator working in that. And I was like, wow, what we had here was, it was almost like John Carpenter took Escape from New York and then like, put it in the middle of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Ooh, that's a great analogy.
And it works, and it's really fun,
and
it's really pulpy, and just a thrill to watch.
I wonder if that's why, or part of the reason why this movie has become such a cult classic, because there's not really a lot of movies that like, when you close your eyes and, like you said, think about the settings and the feeling of the movie, I really can't compare it to anything else. It's very unique in the setting. So good call there on the, all right, so what didn't you like?
What I didn't like about it was, like I said, I think a lot of the writing was sloppy, and I don't know if that falls on the editing, on the writing, on the direction. I mean, I love John Carpenter's direction, so it's hard for me to throw it on his shoulders. I think he did a great job with what he had, especially being rushed as he was.
Right.
The score I wasn't too pleased with. And I just think the general flow of the story. I think if you were going to remake this movie, I would just want a script doctor to come in and kind of flesh some things out a little bit. I don't need them to work on like the relationship between Grace and Jack, because honestly, I love the way it ended, where he's getting ready to go and the girl's like, "Aren't you going to kiss her goodbye?" And he looks at her and you see Kim Cattrall up against the wall.
She's waiting.
And he just looks at her and he goes, "No." And just walks off. And what? But I love about that, it's not only is it badass, but there are different levels that you can look at that scene as. Like, you know, is it just he looks at her carelessly and he's like, "No." Or is it that he doesn't have to kiss her goodbye because he'll be back.
Yeah.
So he's not going to kiss her goodbye. Mm-hmm. So I kind of dig that too, that whole thought of like, because I'm not going to say goodbye to you, I'm not going to kiss you goodbye. Really cool. And she's nice. Like, "See you around." He's like, "You know, we'll see," or something along those lines.
Very noncommittal.
Yeah, very noncommittal, but there's something about Jack that's very, it's still endearing.
Yeah.
But I would have, I think, what did I not like the most? The writing in this. I think the writing could have been fleshed out a little bit more.
And
even
maybe
though
it was.
I enjoyed it.
This was another short, I say short movies. It's not really. Like, most movies back then were an hour and 40 minutes, and that's what this is. It's only recently in the last 10 years that we feel like everything has to be over 2 hours.
Yeah, everything's got to be
over 2 hours. Or you're not getting your money's worth. And it's like, nah, every now and then I like a movie that's tight and knows what it is and doesn't try to just pad.
Exactly. All right, so if you were going to recast this.
Yes.
Who would you cast in this movie?
Well, I had some difficulties because I was watching it and I'm like, fuck, who, like I mentioned earlier, who other than Kurt Russell can do this? Mm-hmm. The first aha moment I had, because I was talking about this guy does action, this guy's doing comedy, but he's like very sincere, he's buying into the role. Who else nowadays can do that? Uh-huh. And I was like, aha, Mark Wahlberg. Mark Wahlberg can do comedy. He was in Ted.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like in the, not Lone Ranger, what's it called? Lone Survivor, Soul Survivor, it's called.
Lone Survivor.
He does action. But, and then you think of like Boogie Nights and what's the one where the trees are killing us? Not the village.
The Happening.
He totally buys in. He's sincere. He really believes what's going on. And I could see him in that role in another kind of movie.
Okay.
But then you got to take a little bit of the comedy out of it, or at least some of the slapstick. And I don't like that direction. So I'm going to take it the other way. Sam Rockwell. I like Sam Rockwell in this role.
I'm cool with that. No, I'm really cool with that. I think that's a good
idea. That wasn't your choice, was it?
That's a good idea. No,
okay,
it wasn't.
Maybe
no,
I'd stolen your thing.
I like Sam Rockwell. I don't see Sam Rockwell as an action guy,
but
I kind of dig that.
He's not your stereotypical action guy, but I think if I'm remaking this, I'm like upping the comedy a little more than they did in this movie and really maybe even kind of having some of those moments where you're breaking that fourth wall and winking at the audience. Not literally, but you know.
Which he can do.
He can do that. And we want to move on. So there's my Kurt Russell choice.
Okay.
Why don't you give me your, do you want to bounce back?
Yeah, we'll bounce back.
What do you think?
Wow, Sam Rockwell's really good. I was thinking the same thing you were along, you know, when you were first saying like, okay, I want to pick somebody who could do action, but who can also, you know, who could be a little sincere, but, you know, is also a bit of a heartthrob.
Mm-hmm.
And can do comedy. I went with Channing Tatum.
Oh my God!
I thought Channing Tatum would have been a good Jack Burton.
Like as you were describing it, I was like, yeah. I bet he's going Channing Tatum.
Because I got to tell you, dude, I kind of dig the work that this guy does. I think he gets a bum rap from people just because he's a pretty boy. But
no.
I've enjoyed a lot of the stuff he's done.
Yeah.
I enjoyed his work in the 21 Jump Street movie. I thought he was really good in that.
Magic Mike.
Magic Mike I thought was really good.
I mean, what?
No, but Magic Mike's a good flick, dude. I've finally seen it, and
That's what I hear.
It wasn't bad. So the dude gets, I mean, yeah, he did the G.I. Joe movies. I like the G.I. Joe movie. It's not a good movie, but I like it.
Enjoyable.
It's a live-action episode of the cartoon.
Sure.
I think he could pull this Jack Burton thing off.
I think you're right.
He's also the voice of Superman in the Lego movie.
No way, is he?
And Jonah Hill is the voice of the Green Lantern, which will make a lot of sense when you see the movie.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to that.
Okay.
What about who else did you? Kim Cattrall, the Gracie Law character.
Okay, who'd you pick for that?
I'm gonna go first. This one's fairly obvious, but I think she can again stay in this world. I like Amy Adams for this. She's already got green eyes.
Uh-huh.
She can kind of pull off that fast talking career gal. Sort of feel.
Uh-huh.
And she's shown us before she can do comedy and Muppets. And actually, Muppets is another good example. She's already worked with, you know, inanimate objects and made it believable. So I like Amy Adams in that role.
Yeah, okay.
What about you?
I can't remember her name, but uh-huh. She played Elliot on Scrubs.
Oh, yes. And was on How I Met Your Mother.
I can't remember her name, though.
Oh, what is her name? She's fantastic.
She was also in that How to Live with Your Parents or whatever TV show, that short-lived show.
Yeah.
I would have picked her for Gracie because I think she's sexy.
Hell yeah, dude.
She's funny as hell.
Yes, she is.
And she knows tongue-in-cheek when she gets it.
Mm-hmm, great comedic timing.
And the thing is, I've also seen her do a little bit of drama stuff, like with How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah.
She was able to carry some of the heavy scenes mm-hmm. as well. I love that chick, and I can't remember her name life of me, but that's who I would have cast as Grace.
That's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. Yeah. All right, let's go Sam Rockwell and Elliot from Scrubs.
That sounds like a good one. That's our remake of Big Trouble in Little China. To be completely honest, instead of Big Trouble in Little China, we should have watched Showdown in Little Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Dolph Lundgren and the late Brandon Lee.
Is he in that?
Yes. Oh, and Tia Carrera plays like the femme fatale.
Oh, of course.
And it is so bad.
Yeah.
It's so tongue in cheek. And what you have by the end of this movie is Dolph Lundgren running around in like a Japanese gi. But firing like machine guns at bad guys and stuff.
No.
It's so wild watching Dolph Lundgren get billed as the big action kung fu star, and Bruce Lee's son is like the sidekick.
Wow.
It's amazing. So we need to throw that on the list. We should have done that one instead of this one.
Well, now we have to wait a year to do that movie.
Do you have anything else you want to say about this movie?
Oh, I'm still recasting. I've got some casting choices.
Okay. I thought we were just doing those
because
two.
We're done with the white people. All we have to talk about.
Wow.
No, I'll give you I won't go with all the other little characters. But for Lopan, the bad guy.
Uh-huh.
Especially if we're going to, in my version of this, we're kind of upping the comedy a little bit. Still keeping it real, as uh-huh. the kids say nowadays. But man, Ken Jeong, is that how you say his name? Can't you picture him in that role with that makeup, doing those lines?
Damn it. We both picked Ken Jeong.
Did you really?
For different roles.
Oh, who are you going to have?
I picked him for Egg. I picked Ken Jeong as Egg.
Okay. I
actually wanted to bring the original guy who played Lopan back to play Lopan again.
He's still around, man. Uh-huh.
I would have wanted to recast him as Lopan.
He probably looks like
He probably looks like him in the old makeup now.
I'm picturing like the makeup artist walking up to him and like taking a dab of just a little on the side, like, "Yep, we're done.
We're done."
Exactly. And roll.
Yeah. No, I would have just picked the original Lopan.
That's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Ken Jeong. Yeah. Well, he's
I think great. He would have done great as he would have made a good Lopan though too. You watch some of his work like in the movie Role Models where he's like like that's so Lopan stuff. So I get where you're coming with that.
Well, we could do like an Eddie Murphy thing and he could play
he plays both
characters.
Dude, that would be amazing.
Right? He could do it. Or you can get like Jackie Chan or Chow Yun-Fat to do the Egg Chan role.
Yeah, cuz that's likely.
Yeah.
I mean, Chow Yun-Fat did do Bulletproof Monk.
Now, what about? We won't go through everybody, but what about Wang? Like the main character,
Wang,
as I would call.
God.
Do you have any thoughts on him?
You know what? I didn't cast Wang.
Okay.
I didn't do like a fantasy casting for him.
Cast Wang.
I didn't cast Wang. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know off the top of my head. I can't think of what's his name? Not Frank Cho. What's his name in Harold and Kumar?
Cal Penn?
No, not Cal Penn. The other guy.
Oh, yeah.
Cho.
Yeah, John. Is it John Cho?
No, I don't know. He played...
yeah, because you're right. Cal Penn's the other
he's
guy.
He's in the Star Trek movie.
He's in the remake of the Star Trek movies.
He plays Sulu. Yeah.
That's
maybe
not
it
Cal
is John.
Penn?
Maybe it's John Cho.
Is it John Cho? That
maybe it is John Cho.
Right.
I don't know. While you look up your notes, I'll look up because now I feel like a racist fucking
asshole.
No,
it's okay. Well, I'm going with, I don't know if you're familiar with the name, but if I showed you a picture of him, you definitely know who it is. But Bobby Lee, who used to be on Mad
on
TV.
Mad TV.
I like
who was
him.
Also in the Harold and Kumar movie.
Yeah, that's right. He was. I know he's not your typical leading man kind of type, and uh-huh. I'm not sure. Like, I came up with that idea before I saw the end sequence where he has to do all those the epic fight scene. I'm like, not quite sure Bobby Lee's going to be able to pull this off.
No.
He's going to need to train Keanu Reeves style for like 6 months before they shoot. But certainly that world where it's, he can, like, even I have a feeling if I saw him do Shakespeare, I would think it's a like he could be doing Hamlet and I'd be laughing my ass off because he's one of those guys who just walks on screen.
I think I think Bobby Lee would have made a good like the maitre d' character guy
or that guy too.
I think he would have probably done a good job with that.
Well, my second choice would be Aziz Ansari.
He's not even close to Chinese.
No, I know he kind of is. Actually, I googled it and apparently he is. He's like half. So I'm gonna throw him in there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
All right. At least he could do the stunts.
I think it's John Cho. I can't get on Jeff's Wi-Fi here.
I think you're right. I think it is John Cho.
I've got full bars of Wi-Fi, but I'm not getting any kind of...
Well, that's the obvious choice then. We'll do him and we'll do Ken Jeong in both roles.
In both roles.
Maybe if we can't that get... if what's Forget,
his name? If the original Lopan's too
dies
old.
Dies beforehand. Yep. But I'm serious about a remake. This is a movie that needs to be remade. Of all the... You know, because Hollywood is on this remake kick. And I guess for a while they always have been.
Yeah.
This is a movie that they need to get on. With the cast that we just laid out.
I agree.
It's a blockbuster, man.
I agree. Maybe we could get Kurt Russell in to play like a minor role. He could
He
could just kind of show up at like a dock or something.
Throw a bone to the old...
Exactly.
Right. I like it. Let's do it.
I've got nothing else on this movie.
No. It's pretty solid. I didn't think I was going to like it. Held off 20 years watching it, and I want my life back
and
now.
Just as I suspected, we were not able to fill an hour talking about just that movie.
That's all right.
We talked about everything but Big Trouble in Little China. I'm interested, though, still to find out what you, the listener, think about Big Trouble in Little China. If you have any opinions on that, you can always write us on our Facebook page. Just go to Facebook in the search bar, put the editing bay, and there's our page right there, the chick with the bleeding eyes.
Yep.
And let us know what you think. If there's a movie that you want us to talk about, let's make sure it isn't a wonderful John Carpenter classic before you suggest that we watch it. Maybe go to Rotten Tomatoes or IMDb and look at the rating on it.
Filter.
Make sure it isn't like at 90%. and go ahead and suggest those to us. And we've got our live event coming up on April 11th, and we would love for you to be there. It's going to be at the Cox Building Playhouse in Plano. Obviously, you've got to be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to enjoy this thing.
That's right.
But you know, soon enough, you could plan a trip. Come on down. We've got an event page set up. You can access that also from our Facebook page. $5 gets you in.
Yeah.
You can watch the movie. And then afterwards, Joel and I will sit down and discuss the movie. We're taking questions and comments from the audience. We might have some guests with us as well.
Right.
And we would love to see you there. And as always, please tell your friends about this podcast.
Yeah.
Tell them about, hey, you like bad movies? You like listening to dudes talk horribly about bad movies? Why don't you check out this podcast?
Like racial insensitivity?
Yeah, exactly. There's this guy, Joel, and he's like, he's totally racist.
I'm being edgy, folks.
just let them know about the editing, baby, because we would love to grow this show.
Did you mention that you can vote for the movie that we're going to be watching?
We are going to have some we'll have some prizes, some giveaways. I'm trying to work on getting a design together for a T-shirt for this thing.
Ooh, nice!
And
you're pointing at me like I'm supposed to do that
because you are the designer. I was like, Joel, I need an image for this event page.
I'm working on it.
On it.
I'm working on it.
There's nothing.
It was Valentine's Day weekend.
For a while, I've been using a picture of George C. Scott from the movie. Hardcore.
Hardcore. Turn it off.
Turn it off. So you can, as Joel said, you can vote for the movie. We've got four options. They are Congo. Jurassic Park 3. There's an American Ninja 2.
Yeah.
And the front runner right now in the voting is the live action Masters of the Universe movie.
Speaking of Dolph Lundgren,
which I've got to say, like, I really hope that one wins.
It's a front runner right now, so yes. it's gonna be a miracle.
Oh my god, it's gonna be so fantastic!
Yep.
And we would love for you to be a part of it. Again, just go to our Facebook page, The Editing Bay, and look up the information there. My name's Joe,
and I'm Joel,
and we will catch you next time. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Next Wave Radio Network.
That's fucking gold.